You're listening to the GP Supervision Australia podcast. It's as easy as PQRST. Effective case discussion in GP training. Presented by Dr. Simon Morgan and Dr. Jess Wrigley. We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which this recording was produced and pay our respects to their elders past, present, future, and their families.
Welcome all to this almost ubiquitous method of assessment and teaching that we as supervisors use in practice, that's case discussion, and really trying to put a bit more of a framework around how to do it effectively, in particular in the context of when a registrar calls for help. And we're going to be talking about the PQRST and hopefully demonstrating that it is as easy as those five letters. My name's Simon Morgan. I'm a GP here on Awabakal country. I'm a medical educator at GPSA, I guess primarily tonight, but also with the RSCGP and do a little bit of other bits and pieces around the place. And I'm very ably assisted tonight by Jess Wrigley. Jess is in many respects very similar to all that. She's a GP at Awabakal Aboriginal Medical Service here in Newcastle, also coming from Awabakal country. She's also an RSCGP medical educator and works with GPSA. Jess, welcome along. We are going to start, I guess, pretty broadly and think about all the teaching methods that you as supervisors and we as medical educators use in the teaching of registrars, but in particular focusing on case discussion. We're going to talk about using a more formal approach and comparing some of the models that have been described with the focus of PQRST, but really, really practically, we're wanting to demonstrate how this can be used and demonstrate its efficacy, why using something like the PQRST model can actually really make case discussion a very valuable teaching and assessment tool. What assessment and teaching methods can we use in a day-to-day, week-to-week, supportive registrars in our practice? I guess why am I taking you through this? Partly because I want to sort of focus in and hone in. We want to start to talk about case discussion, but also it's a reminder as supervisors, as educators, we sometimes do default to the commonly used techniques, and I think they're likely to be sitting in random case analysis and obviously discussing registrars' problems clinically, probably as well as more broadly. But really a reminder that the whole range of methods that can make teaching, I guess, more engaging and potentially touch on other aspects of teaching and learning that the methods we're traditionally using don't. And you may have heard me before, plug role play as a really, really powerful teaching method. Video analysis, which is pretty confronting, but role play can be as well, and registrars may feel quite confronted or threatened by this. What I really like to encourage supervisors to do is not say, let's do a 10-minute role play and you'll of course feel grilled and it'll be really challenging, but let's do a 30-second role play. Let's just perhaps explain the diagnosis that you talked to the patient about, or maybe safety net that particular child's illness, or maybe just take a brief sexual history from me in the context of the presentation, as opposed to a whole consultation, and mixing that up with the other methods can be so powerful. But all these methods are case discussion. They're all versions of a case. They're all just different ways of inputting into the case. You either observe the whole case, you watch it on a video, you hear a registrar present the case because they have some issues about how to manage the patient. You come in at the level of the results or the prescriptions or referrals, or there's been a critical incident. So I guess when we talk about case discussion, we're really embracing all those types of methods. Let's now focus our attention from the breadth of teaching methods to case discussion to more specifically so-called registrar-initiated case discussion. And I guess that really means a registrar when they're calling for help, when they're seeking assistance. This is not going to be unfamiliar to you, but just to kind of think about the supervisor-initiated case discussion, which often follows the formative assessment tasks like random case analysis, like sitting in and watching a registrar. They tend to be scheduled, they tend to be longer in duration, the discussion that occurs, and they tend to be focused more on the registrar's learning and less urgent clinical care and I guess learning needs, as opposed to when a registrar calls you, which tends to be opportunistic, certainly in the corridor type consultations, even with problem case discussion at the end of the day, you know, a bit briefer probably, and more a focus on the patient's safety and the registrar's more immediate needs. I need some assistance either straight away, or can we talk about this at the end of the day? The focus of the PQRST model and this so-called registrar-initiated case discussion will be these two methods. Problem case discussion, it's the end of the afternoon, got a bunch of patients I wouldn't mind talking to you about, or hi there, can you come in, or can we meet in the tea room? I need to ask you about a patient. Ad hoc type encounters. And so just a little bit of background, I guess, on those. They are by far and away the commonest teaching and learning methods. It's almost so common that we don't even think about them because they just happen. But, you know, we think, well, direct observation or maybe looking at a registrar's notes. But this stuff's happening all the time, driven by the nature and urgency of the clinical situation, as we've talked about. And they can be as simple as call a dermatologist or send them to hospital or it's pityriasis rosea. But they can be as rich learning opportunities to really explore and develop clinical knowledge, reasoning skills, and tolerance of uncertainty. And that's really why we're talking about this. I guess it's at this point I would say what we're doing is presenting a framework. And if you want to unpick the bits that work and weave them into your own way of doing it, that's absolutely perfect. There is no perfect model. And certainly what we're presenting is only one of a number, but there's some advantages, I think, and hopefully some of it at least will resonate with you. In thinking about calling for help, registrars seeking guidance from their supervisors and the supervisors, and you will see the terminology informal teaching. That's common parlance. I guess I have some slight disquiet with that because, yes, it's teaching. Sometimes it's not, you know, it's an emergency or the registrar really is struggling or very late and it's really just helping them out and giving them some guidance. So the teaching element exists, but I prefer to think of it more help seeking and case discussion, I guess. So it is often unstructured and to various degrees, supervisors use some kind of approach. At least that sort of getting a commitment, which is one of the common themes in the models. So if you want to think of sort of a hierarchy of improving your discussion, it's tell. So the registrar asks the question and I tell you the answer. That's not terrible, I guess. That's your job to help them out. And if that's what you're doing, then you're probably doing the job. We would encourage maybe a slightly more sophisticated approach. There's asking before you tell, and that's, you know, you've got a question, what is it? I'm going to put that back to you. What do you think? And then I'll help you if I know the answer. And then I guess there's the explore, ask, tell. So that's very much a question. I want a bit more background. I really need to get a sense of what you know and where you're coming from in asking that question. Now I'll say to you, you know, what do you think's going on and what do you think might be the answer? And I'll support you as I can. So they're pretty unstructured, just a bit of an approach. I'm conscious that in the learning objectives for this session, I did say we'd compare and contrast different models, presenting three different approaches, all of which have five or six steps might be a little bit mind-boggling. So I'm going to talk to them, but not specifically. And this may allow you to recall some content from old supervisor orientation programs and things. But the 1 minute preceptor, which sounds as American as it actually is, or the five step micro skills, is something that was developed decades ago in hospital outpatient type settings and has a very strong focus on the learner, the trainee giving a commitment and the preceptor helping them out with the answer. It doesn't have the focus on reasoning that some of the other models have. SNAPS is a more learner-centered model, but it's very diagnostic. It's all about developing a differential and narrowing the differential and analyzing the differential. So that's kind of fine, but it needs to be coming from the learner and it also needs to be a back diagnosis. Jared Ingham, who I've referred to, a GP medical educator in Victoria, wrote a really nice paper some years ago. In fact, I think the best part of the paper was its title, which was Consultation Interruptus, which is fabulous. And he proposed this model, which is the WWW doc model, which had specific applicability for when the patient is in the room. And so I think that is a really useful technique. Again, there's no magic in any of these, and indeed in PQRST, they're all versions of a theme. And Jared's models around why you're calling me, you know, who's in the room, a case discussion, opportunities for learning, and a conclusion. So I hope I haven't shortchanged you by avoiding going through those in detail, but I thought it just might become a little bit mind-boggling. We certainly have references and can point you to some of those. But PQRST incorporates elements of all of them. And I guess why we're excited to be talking about it is it's Australian, but it's very general practice centered, as is WWW Doc, but it also has these elements that I think make for a much richer experience. And what is it? It refers to the P being the patient's problem, the Q, which is the registrar's question. You might think, well, isn't that? That's pretty apparent. But I'm hoping in going through this, you're going to actually reflect on the fact that so often registrars don't actually ask a specific question. They just present a case and then the conversation flows. We're going to talk about reasoning. We're going to talk about the fact that it is our job as supervisors, at least in some sense, to facilitate the answer to a question. And obviously, the clinical needs of the patient are paramount, but the learning needs of the registrar also exist in that sort of encounter. And this all came to me on the train returning from a GP Synergy supervisor orientation day where we talked about the one-minute preceptor. And I was thinking, there's got to be something different and better about a model. And somehow the ECG complex came into my head and these particular elements of the process, and PQRST was born. And we published on that, which was really exciting. So let's tease it out. Problem representation. And this is a term I'm hoping is gaining familiarity in the supervisor cohort as it is with medical educators. It's that sort of summary of the case in a few sentences that includes really, really key aspects. The patient demographics and risk factors, the temporal pattern of the illness, so-called semantic qualifiers, things like waxing and waning or intermittent or worsening or improving or those sorts of words, and obviously the clinical syndrome. Jess, you've been a medical educator now for a spell. What's your experience of observing problem representations in registrars?
I'm just thinking about how often I've ever seen a registrar really do a problem representation. I think it rarely happens in this format naturally. I think sometimes if you're sort of trying to force it out of them, it will, but I think often they just sort of, it'll be a lot more kind of rambling at times, I think, especially if they're a bit desperate and unsure what's going on.
I was hoping you'd say that because I think that might be the experience of many supervisors. And again, guys, if that is your experience, that when a registrar calls and says, I've got Mrs. Smith in here, or can I talk to you about Joe, who I saw earlier today, I think sometimes the presentation of these problems can be a bit rambling and a bit disorganized. And encouraging registrars to present in a really, really neat problem representation helps, assists them with their reasoning, assists them with thinking about key features, assists with certainly your capacity to get your handle on the clinical scenario and how you might help manage it. The second part is the question. And I think we can be and should be as overt as saying to a registrar, thanks for the case. That's really good. I've got a sense of the patient you're wanting to ask about. And what particularly do you want to know? What are you asking of me? Because my observation is that's commonly not asked and it can be lost a little bit. The second and maybe more background aspect of this, but if you want to shine a light on this and actually try to bring this to the surface, I think is fascinating, is to actually try to get a sense of why the registrar's asking the question. And some work that James Brown did around help seeking by registrars, and trying to gauge whether the registrar is truly drowning, truly floundering, and actually is seeking your support by way of rescue. They're at sea. They're going to drown unless you help them. Obviously, that's often in consultation rather than problem case discussion. Or they're across the case to a degree. They're certainly maybe inexperienced or not wholly familiar with what to do. And they're really just wanting kind of your guidance and a bit of assistance, but they're kind of on track, or they're doing well. They may be a more anxious practitioner. They may be preparing for exams and wanting some kind of confirmation, and they're really just seeking more reassurance. I think that's a really, really interesting context to start considering when registrars ask for help. And if you want to actually overtly ask that, I'm really curious. You seem like you're across this. Are you really just seeking reassurance here, or is it more that you really are stuck and you want some more support? Clinical reasoning is the absolute essence of general practice training. There's nothing more important than you guys and we as educators can do than to help registrars reason. And so I think that gets lost a little bit in this whole process of case discussion. Now, yes, you're running late, you're with the patient, the registrar's running late, they're with the patient, they give you a ring. To assess their reasoning to any degree in that context, I admit, is challenging, and it's only going to be a little snippet. But certainly in the more relaxed environment of problem case discussion, and certainly in all the non-registrar initiated case discussions that you have, assessment and hopefully developing of reasoning should be a really fundamental part of that, including some of these aspects of how they reason. S for solution. I wanted this to be A for answer, because solution sounds a little bit formal or odd or business-like perhaps, but man, it fitted the model, so there you go. And so again, you're asking me this question, this is how I think I can help. And that is very often helping registrars to find the answer, because very often we don't have the answer ourselves. We certainly attempt to identify what they know. And then I think the ST, I don't know, is it a slurred ST? Is it a kind of common ST complex? But ST, for me, a little bit blurred, because often in the teaching, you're providing a solution. You might be looking up guidance. You might be giving your own practical wisdom as to what to do. But that's the end bit. And of course, I think the T can drop off too, in that it's worth hearing the problem representation well. You want to know what the question is. Even if it's very brief, you're going to get a sense of their reasoning, if their thinking's clear or not, and you provide help. If it's brief or an emergency or the context isn't right, teaching may fall away, but ideally a little bit of teaching. All right, so that is PQRST. And Jess and I thought we would run a little bit of a role play, but we'll try to make this the sort of context of a problem case discussion at the end of the day. Claire's a GPT-1. She's maybe 3 months in. She's going along okay. She certainly recognizes her limitations. Her knowledge base is reasonable for a registrar of that experience. And she's probably a little bit anxious on the scale as it goes. Claire is seeking my guidance as part of the sort of end of the day discussion. So, hey, Claire.
Oh, hi. Hi, Adam. How are you going?
Yeah, good.
I just, have you got time? You don't have to rush off. Just want to ask you about a patient. I've seen a girl twice now. I'm Claire Kyle. I think you've seen her family before. Anyway, I've seen her twice this month, and she's had about 6 months of kind of, tummy pain that just keeps coming back. And mum's really worried about it because she's missing a bit of school and it's not really clear what's going on.
I might stop you there if that's okay. I went to this webinar the other day about how to make this a bit more sort of structured. I'm going to give this a bit of a crack, but there's this thing called a problem representation. Do you remember we talked about that, how to kind of just succinctly give the case?
Yeah.
Can you maybe start again and just try to give those key features and the illness description and things?
So Kalia is an 11-year-old girl, previously well, who's got a 6-month history of recurrent episodes of central abdominal pain, which is sharp and intermittent in nature, and it lasts for a few days to a week, happening every few weeks, sometimes associated with diarrhea, but no PR bleeding, no periods yet, no significant family history. And I mean, looking at her, the two times I've seen her in the last few weeks, she looks well. Her tummy's soft, but just tender, kind of generalized tenderness everywhere. I did on the first visit request stool culture, which was negative, an OCP negative.
Excellent. Thank you. So that's a nice problem representation. I've got a bit of a sense of her now. The next thing's the queue. So tell me, what do you want to ask me about particularly?
I'm just not sure about investigation. So I was wondering, should I be doing more or potentially more invasive investigations now, and what ones?
Yeah, and that is a it's always a bit of a challenge in children, I think, and this kind of scenario. So what I wouldn't mind doing now is maybe just unpacking things a little bit and getting a sense of your understanding of the case. So thanks for the history. You gave me a good history. What other features might you need to consider? What other features on history, perhaps, that you might not have mentioned to me or?
I can't remember if I mentioned. So she's had a little bit of diarrhea occasionally. She hasn't had any vomiting, and her weight is okay. So she's kind of always been above the 50th, just above the 50th for height and weight, and that's still where she is. So she hasn't lost any weight, and she hasn't had any night symptoms either. So.
Yeah, great. So you've given me some negative red flags, which is great. Were there any other red flags that you asked about or you need to think about?
So there's no weight loss, no bleeding. She hasn't, I did ask about like fever,
Great. Yep.
which she hasn't had, no rash, no joint symptoms, no eye, pain or redness or anything like
Oh,
that.
excellent. Yeah. Good. And have you mentioned family history? What sorts of things were you
I was
specifically thinking?
mainly thinking about like inflammatory bowel and celiac, were the main ones, which there isn't any known history of that. Mum was quite concerned, about her pain, which is kind of, and then that was what made me sort of think, oh, is there something going on in the family? But I'm just thinking about other red flags, and with her, the intermittent diarrhea, I just realized now I haven't really established how often that diarrhea is happening and what her kind of regular bowel or
Yeah.
normal kind of bowel pattern is.
I think that's a really important question to ask it around diet, around normal bowel habit and that sort of thing in a child like this. There's another big area of history that I think important that you may have touched on, you may not have. And that sort of psychosocial stuff. Did you explore any of that?
No, not really. I mean, Mum just mentioned that she had missed a few days of school because of it, but
Yeah.
I didn't really ask much more about that.
Okay, yeah. So I'm curious, she said, well, you told me that she's having episodes where she's quite well in between. How much weight do you put on that in terms of your sense of something concerning going on?
I think it's kind of reassuring in a way that, she does get better, but obviously with things like inflammatory bowel
Yeah.
disease, it can be very episodic. So that feature alone, I wouldn't be kind of comfortable that that
Yeah,
means that everything's fine.
I think that's excellent. That's a good way of considering it. And I guess, yeah, what so at this point, what would be your differential, Claire?
I guess I'm wondering about celiac disease just because, I don't know, I unless I just didn't write it down, but I'm not clear on, any association with certain foods or diet, that sort of thing. And again, I haven't really established what her bowel habit's been like other than these few episodes of possible diarrhea. So I guess, constipation's always a
Yeah.
thought. Inflammatory bowel disease is possible. I guess I'm reassured by the no blood and that her weight's okay. Whether it's like an irritable bowel or some anxiety thing, like you mentioned the psychosocial stuff, like I haven't like yeah I wasn't yeah I just guess I wasn't sure, like I mean I didn't want to pin it on that straight away, but I wasn't sure like where's the line for like doing bloods or that kind of stuff.
hence your question.
Yeah.
Good. Look, that's really helpful. I think I've got a bit of a sense of the way you've interrogated the case and thought about it and your approach. I always get a little bit uncomfortable at this point of this framework with the S, the solution, because often I don't think I know the answer, but I'll certainly help you in the best I can. I guess I've got a few thoughts, but I'd be keen to get your sense initially. What you're asking about investigations, what's your sense? Do you think she probably should proceed to have some tests at this point or not?
Yeah, well, I went on health pathways to see if that had anything, but there wasn't for, you know, kids with recurrent tummy pain like Kalia's. Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like she needs to do bloods. Like, she looks quite well and there's not red flags there, but I guess I'm just, I don't know, mum's really worried, and I guess I kind of then feel worried. I don't want to miss something major. I'm pretty sure I remember that x-rays aren't really useful, but I haven't actually checked.
So you touched on two really nice things, I think, as part of your reasoning, and that is one, that you've got a gut feeling that things are okay, which we can't rely on wholly, but that can help guide us a little bit. And secondly, that the mother is worried, and that can lead us to do tests when they're not indicated, but it can be an important guide. Do you have any other sense of evidence-based guidelines that we might go to?
Yeah, I just remembered, I think RCH sometimes have good things for kids.
They do, actually. They're excellent. And in fact, let's have a look, and there's a good chapter on abdominal pain. And they do talk about an organic and functional type categorization, and your differential was pretty good, I think. We talked about red flags, and look at that, they're in red and bold. So that's nice, and you covered most of those. And some of those other aspects of the assessment, I think. I do think head screen there. So the sort of psychosocial aspects of care, I think, of her background are really important to identify.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think just broadly speaking, investigations, most children don't need any investigations and should be targeted to the likely diagnoses and possible tests there. You're right about the imaging, that it's probably pretty low yield. That said, I think a urine test is always easy and reasonable to obtain. So my sense here, Claire, is it's probably not unreasonable maybe to get her back and maybe explore some of those other aspects of the history. I like to share the uncertainty, but also share the low yield of tests. And, you know, we always have to think hard about doing investigations in children. I don't know that there's an urgency at this stage. And I think, but, you know, maybe explore that with the mum. Did you actually get a sense of why she's worried about anything particular?
I think it was more just because she was missing school, and then, you know, she gets better and then it kind of happens again. And I think it was more just because she's not sure what's going on.
Yep.
But yeah, maybe I'll get her back. And yeah, I definitely need to ask a bit more about the intake and output kind of patterns.
Yeah.
And maybe just do another weight check or something, just to kind of get a good chart that over time and stuff, because that can be fairly reassuring, I suppose.
Excellent. So the last step's the T, and I think we've hopefully talked a little bit about, I've certainly learned a bit myself just looking at this, but the teaching side of things. I really like the sort of general principles that RCH often have. And here in most children, no organic causes found. I really like this notion that non-specific abdominal pain in children is a diagnosis to be made, and we don't need to exclude everything else. It's a bit like IBS. So, you know, we can make a positive diagnosis and we don't have to do a whole bunch of tests to exclude everything else. Mm. And most kids, in the absence of red flags, this pain's likely to be functional. So they're good general principles, I think. But how about, yeah, do that and we can discuss this again once you've seen her.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
And certainly I wouldn't, you know, I think she does need investigation if things aren't settling or things are getting worse. But
yeah,
I think
I'll
right
make sure
now
I have a safety net and stuff. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Claire. Great. All right. Thank you, Claire. Thank you. I don't know what, probably we should have timed that just to get a sense of how long that took. But I don't know that that was particularly different to the kind of time you might spend exploring problem cases with the registrar, particularly when you're taking a focus on reasoning, assessment and teaching. That's a version of a kind of a more structured approach. What can I say to you, Claire/Jess, in doing that? I mean, I had a very clear sense of of your patient. I think that sense of a kind of disorganized history is very common, and to pull a registrar up and to say, no, 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 please try to do it as a problem representation, which for those of you who are RSCGP supervisors will know is the basis of the key feature stuff. That sort of stem is essentially a problem representation. And increasingly the AKT now, which are a longer MCQ stems similarly.
I thought it was a good way to explore what the registrar actually wants to know. Like the question, which is why I think having question second is probably better, because often the registrar doesn't actually come with a question. They just come with like a bit of a story about what they've seen and then hoping that you'll kind of give them the answer. So it's good to actually force the question out of them after they've told you about the case.
And if they say, I just don't know what to do, that's actually very revealing, I think, in that, you know, they may be really floundering and overwhelmed with anxiety and not coping with uncertainty and all those sorts of things. And that might be an opportunity to explore. Or if they've got a really nice defined question, and you're right, I think helping them define the question. Well, I was going to say we labored the reasoning. I don't think we labored the reasoning at all. I mean, as your supervisor, I'd want to get a sense of how you're reasoning. My sense was that you're reasoning really well. What I really like and would encourage when you get a differential, Claire in this role play did this well, but if you facilitate it, so when you give me your differential, it's not just the list, but the pros and cons. I'm thinking it could be IBS. And the things that support that are these, and the things that maybe go against are these. And so that's a really, really good way of getting a sense of reasoning. And it's quite nice to be able to say, well, S is a solution, and I've no clue. It's a tricky case, that's why you're asking me, but let's give it a crack and look it up together. And like we do with patients, we often read through patient information leaflets and help educate ourselves and then look authoritative. We can do that with registrars and just say, yeah, let's look this stuff up together. And And then I really do think general practice and supervision is an art as well as a science. And so we can say, and I didn't quite say in this, but, you know, Claire, I've seen lots and lots of kids like this one who get this tummy pain, and really very, very uncommonly they have anything significant going on. I'd be very happy to sit tight for a while, but, you know, it's so important to get a sense of, is there something else going on for her? That's, you won't maybe read that in books or in the guidelines, but that's my experience as a GP. And to me, that's as important T for teaching as looking up guidance. I guess you might say, so why PQRST over anything else or anything at all? I'd like to think using a framework is going to do the things we've talked about. It'll help assess and teach reasoning. It'll help clarify the question. It'll help facilitate a response and teaching. It's a model that we've never sort of tested in any sense, which is why we've really encouraged some of you to use it or some version of this, you know, in your teaching and see how that fits. And as I say, if you reject it out of hand, if you incorporate the bits you like, if you weave it into another version of what you do, all well and good. I think as long as some of those elements come out, that's fabulous. Just by way of summary, just nice to get a sense of what we've talked about. So we talk very broadly about all the teaching and learning methods, of which there are many, many, many. And I guess a plug and encouragement to broaden the scope of the methods you use if you're a bit narrow or you'd like to try something different. We then talked about case discussion and all those versions of case discussion. We then more specifically focused on registrar-initiated case discussion or your registrar asking for help, problem case discussion or ad hoc sort of supervision. And then we talked about the PQRST and our ECG complex. The other resource that GPSA have developed is the how to do problem case discussion. So we've got the clinical reasoning one, but how to do problem case discussion / ad hoc teaching and focuses on PQRST. And this is essentially just a two-pager and a reminder of how to do it. Our community platform, for those of you who are already on it, great. Or if you're not a member of that thing, you can go to our website and request to join the community. And we're going to increasingly use this as a mechanism of communication, of discussion and engagement.
You mentioned not stating the steps too often in case the registrar works out your method. Is it an issue if they understand your teaching method?
Oh, no. Well, I think I was saying actually more, it would get quite boring if after 10 times you're saying, let's do the problem. It was more that they would understand the method and there's no point labouring it. No. In fact, increasingly, I'm saying to registrars, go to GPSA and read all about what supervisors do. You need to understand how supervisors think and what they do and how they teach you so that you can make the most of it. So no, absolutely not. It's not magic or it's not hidden.
You know, it's great if they understand the method and they know the order, because then with each time they present a case, hopefully they'll start to just automatically give you the problem representation and already have that question in mind and so on. So
thanks so much for coming along. All the very best.
Thanks for listening. We'd love your feedback. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a rating and or a review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast with your colleagues. If you'd like to ask a question or suggest a topic, you can reach out to us via our social channels. Simply search GP Supervision Australia on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter. GP Supervision Australia is supported by funding from the Australian Government under the Australian General Practice Training Program.